She was born in Milwaukee on February 18, 1924, and she spent her life fighting for social justice and civil rights in Wisconsin. We're going to spend the hour exploring the legacy of Belle Phillips here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The civil rights pioneer died Tuesday. She was elected to the Milwaukee Common Council in 1956, where she would work passionately to put a stop to the mistreatment of the city's black residents, especially when it came to housing. Here she is rebuking her all-white, all-male colleagues on the Common Council in 1967 after they had once again rejected her fair housing ordinance.
It was my wish to save my colleagues the embarrassment of dealing with such a political hot potato during the months when they would be running for office. However, now that I have seen the lack of sincerity as exhibited by the committee, the lack of good faith, and the total unwillingness on the part of the council to deal constructively with the problems of Milwaukee's minorities, it is my firm intention to submit this ordinance for reconsideration as soon as the rules of this council will allow.
Let's bring in Genevieve McBride. She is Emerita Professor of History at UW-Milwaukee. She edited the anthology Women's Wisconsin, From Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium. She's the author of On Wisconsin Women, Working for Their Rights from Settlement to Suffrage. And her mother served as a co-chair on the Wisconsin State Democratic Party alongside Belle Phillips. Genevieve McBride, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, before we get into the Belle Phillips resume, her impact on Milwaukee and the nation, let's look at her from your personal perspective. She worked with your mother. Do you remember your first encounter with Belle Phillips, and what impression did she make on you at a young age?
I don't remember what was the very first one, because she was just part of our lives. I was, I guess, 10 or 11, maybe 9, when Belle and my mother were working together, and because Belle's boys were a bit older, Belle would come to our house, because my mother had 7 children. I was second oldest, and so it was a little hard for her to get away. So Belle would come to our home in Wauwatosa, and that was an early lesson in the segregation we saw then. This is late 1950s, early 1960s. And I must have been after the first time my mother told this story, and I tell it to my students for them to get a glimpse of how overt the racism was in that era, even up here in the city called the Selma of the North. So we were out in Wauwatosa. After Belle left, a neighbor of my mother's came over and said, "Marion, we have our cleaning women come in the back door." This was speaking about a woman who was on the front page of the papers for years by then, nationally recognized. And yet all our neighbors saw was the skin color and thought that Belle Phillips should be treated like the help.
Mm. So when she came to your home and she was working there along with your mother, what were they doing? What were their interactions like?
Their first work together was through League of Women Voters. My mother was very active in that marvelous organization that, of course, dates back to the founding of the suffrage organizations by Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony all the way back to 1869. But, of course, in 1920, became the League of Women Voters. And in the 1950s, and there have been marvelous dissertations done on this, it was one of the very few interracial organizations in my fair city of Milwaukee and surroundings. And so it brought together women of black, white, rich, poor, in efforts to change the city. So that was pretty remarkable. It was a crucial organization, as I later interviewed Belle. It was a crucial organization, the League of Women Voters, in her electoral successes. She had built, through the League of Women Voters, as well as, of course, the NAACP, a network of people who went out and made sure that every doorbell was rung when she ran for office.
Oh, so almost more of a campaign strategy, if you will, working through the league.
That was a benefit, but it was always, like the league, an issues strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us how Vel Phillips is not only an important person in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, but her role as we see it for U.S. history, her broader role.
It's intriguing to realize, reading the obituaries now, I'm still not seeing recognition of what I found in my research about 15 years ago. And I will say that Vel herself did not realize that one of her later elections actually made national history, although an earlier one had too, in a limited way. But in 1978, when Vel Phillips was elected Secretary of State of Wisconsin, it was the first election of an African-American statewide to executive office in this country. That was remarkable. It was not realized at the time. It was later verified by researchers who look at American politics. But even in 1960, Vel had made national waves when she was elected Democratic committee woman from Wisconsin. That meant that she was the first African-American elected. One had been nominated earlier that year, but she was the first African-American elected to national office in the party. And in 1960, that was a crucial role. The Democratic National Committee, of course, runs the convention. The 1960 convention would be quite a game changer. Mm. And she even landed on the Rules Committee, and I've served on the Rules Committee of our Faculty Senate, and that is a crucial role. We've seen that again and again recently, of course, in the Democratic Party, as in any organization. The Rules Committee basically are the gatekeepers deciding which issues will get addressed and which will not.
And you see, look at the pictures of her, and who sat next to her is always really interesting, especially on the national level. Who was surrounding her? That to me is also really interesting as you look at these black and white pictures. What stands out to you there?
That's a very intriguing way to read photography. Good for you. but I think of is who she was pictured next to a lot in 1960. There's in recent years wonderful work by photographers recalling their work then. A photographer who was hired by the Kennedy campaign, the Jack Kennedy campaign, in 1959 and 1960, was told to make sure when Kennedy came to Wisconsin. And remember then, Wisconsin was the first primary. Mm-hmm. So it was very crucial. And Kennedy was a surprise winner of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin in 1960, put him on the road to the White House. Although the state would not be supportive of Kennedy in the general election, but that primary win was huge in the spring. And so Kennedy had come in contact with Vel by then. He certainly made sure she was by his side many times in Wisconsin in 1960. And a photographer later was told, or told us the story later, that as the Kennedy campaign people and Jack Kennedy himself looked at the photos, they wanted to make sure that Vel Phillips looked dark enough to send out to the black press across the country. She then accompanied him on part of his campaign to other states as he was appealing to get what was called the black block of votes. So that was an intriguing insight recently given by the photographer recalling that time. Other times, I think of wonderful photos. There's one I love of Vel Phillips and Shirley Abramson next to each other with smiles as wide as could be when both of them were rising in state politics in the 1970s. What photos did you see?
Well, I just wanted to mention, and we're coming close here to having a news break. After retiring from politics, Vel Phillips spent her life working on several causes, including supporting America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. And then in 2005, she chaired Congresswoman Gwen Moore's run for the U.S. House, and Moore would go on to become both Wisconsin's first female and first African-American member of Congress. We're talking about the life and legacy of Vel Phillips here on The Morning Show. Jen McBride stays with us. She's Emerita Professor of History at UW-Milwaukee, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you know Vel Phillips? What do you remember most about her? Did you or someone you know participate in the Milwaukee Fair Housing marches? Did you ever meet Vel? Call in your remembrances or email them to ideas@wpr.org. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Five years ago, Vel Phillips talked with Milwaukee PBS about her work in the civil rights movement.
I didn't feel like I was historic or different or anything. It was, I got elected to the council. The first name, the V-E-L, I think didn't know whether that was male or female. And here I was, you know, and I felt that this was my chance to make a little difference.
We're exploring the life, the legacy of civil rights pioneer Vel Phillips, who died Tuesday at the age of 94. UW-Milwaukee Emerita History Professor Jen McBride is with us. You can contribute your remembrances and reflect on the impact of Vel Phillips at 800-642-1234. What do you think we should remember about her? Does she inspire you? Does her work make an impact today in something that you're a part of? What do you want to know about her work? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jen McBride, when she's talking there about her name, V-E-L, and saying that, well, perhaps it was her foot in the door being a more masculine name, to me, it seemed like she was looking for any excuse not to promote herself, not to express that it was her own grit, her own determination as the reason for bringing change, especially in Milwaukee.
That was very typical of Vel. She was very self-effacing. Regarding her legacy, I'd like to make one comment. You mentioned before the break her legacy of chairing the campaign that got my Congresswoman Gwen Moore into office. And you mentioned Gwen, of course, was the first African-American in Congress from Wisconsin. She was not the first woman in Congress, though. That goes to you in Madison when you elected Tammy Baldwin.
Tammy Baldwin, right, right. Yes, good catch there.
In 1999, Wisconsin was remains a very difficult place for women to win in politics. Remember, the first woman went into Congress, was elected in 1916. So Wisconsin not sending anybody to Congress till 1999, any woman to Congress till 1999 was very belated. So that was amazing when the Dane County region sent Tammy to Congress. It's great that we now have Gwen Moore in Congress. But you can imagine for Vel running in the 1950s was very difficult. That was, by the way, a shortened form of the name her parents, Russell and Thelma Rogers, gave her at her birth in 1924. She was Vel Valea, and she just shortened it to Vel. She shared a wonderful anecdote about her first campaign. Her campaign manager and marvelous strategist, of course, was her husband, Dale Phillips, an unrecognized man for his many legacies in the community. He was the head of the NAACP in Milwaukee for years before they ran Vel for office. Vel told him he should run, and he said, well, now somebody's got to bring home the daily bread in their joint law practice in our Bronzeville area. But she said that At one point, she and Dale were out and about on the Houstons, and there was another couple they were talking with, and the man said, well, I think I'm going to vote for this Bell Phillips. And they said, well, wonderful. Why is that? And the guy said, well, you know, I hear he's a good guy. And they, Bell and Dale stopped, and Bell said, you know, she and Dale said right away, we hear the same thing about him. You vote for him. in some ways, she was self-effacing. Milwaukee was quite aware when I look at the news coverage, and people used to actually read the newspapers and follow the coverage. They missed no opportunities to put the picture of the African-American woman in the paper. So, and certainly in her ward from which she was elected in 1956, people knew that Bell Phillips was a woman. What they didn't know, and was a marvelous twist to the story, Bell and Dale had been trying for years since their marriage to start a family, had no success. One of the reasons they thought, well, she might as well run for office, is they'd kind of given up. Thought, well, we're just not going to have children. After she announced, which was actually in December of 1955, a days before a woman named Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat in the bus, on the front of the bus in down in Alabama. So Bell really, when you put it in that national context, was an early winner in the civil rights movement. This was just a year after the phenomenal Board v. Brown versus Board. Thank you, Brown. Too early for me. Brown versus Board of Education in Topeka case here in the Midwest. Only after she declared her intent to run for city council did they find out that she was pregnant. Now, it was going to be enough of a battle to get an African American elected, to get a woman elected to city council, but a pregnant woman and a mother, no. So only the day after she was elected did she inform the press that she was expecting.
Wow. How?
She went through that campaign and pregnant and just wore baggy clothes, she said, so nobody knew.
How difficult was it for her to get into law school?
I did not hear that there were difficulties in that. She mentioned that there actually was another African-American woman classmate who did not graduate as soon as Bell did. But that woman was from Africa. Here was Bell Phillips from Milwaukee. But she had the credentials. Remember, she had won at North Division High School here in my city. She had won a speech competition sponsored by the Elks Club with the prize of a national scholarship to go to college wherever she wished. That was phenomenal. And actually, the judges were reluctant to award it to this student when they realized she was Black. But other classmates stood up for her, and she got the scholarship. And she picked Howard University in Washington, D.C. And the significance of Howard University in the 1940s, where professors were grooming the generation.
That was huge.
Including Thurgood Marshall. She talked about the professors she'd had. I looked up the list of the faculty, and it's stunning, the minds that had helped shape this young woman. And it was a real education for her in other ways. Her parents had protected Bell and her sisters, who were also remarkable women. Russell and Thelma had come into this city early in the 20th century, in the Jim Crow era, and yet they originally lived on the near south side, where she would march across the viaduct for civil rights many decades later. But by the, and Bell was born there on the south side. That was so rude to her and the thousands of other marchers in the 1967. But the parents soon moved to the Bronzeville area of our city, as every Black neighborhood was known in every northern city. Because they were concerned in the Jim Crow era about what life was like. And remember, the year that Bell was born here, 1924, there was a huge march on the south side in my city by the Ku Klux Klan. It was gaining power. So we saw the increased segregation as small Black communities around my city. Another was on the Lower East Side near Brady Street. People moved into Brownsville for their own protection. So Vel had grown up protected and in a Black community. She said, despite that experience in her senior year in high school, but she said she never experienced overt discrimination until she went to Washington, D.C., still a very southern city. So that was an education for her. She came back after Howard and spent a year taking some classes at my campus, UW-Milwaukee, or its predecessor. We weren't part of the UW then. She also worked for the YWCA doing some survey work. And that, she said, got her into other parts of the inner city and got her into homes. And she was stunned by the poverty and the deprivation that she saw, the lack of services to the inner city Milwaukee. Because in the 1940s, just before she'd gone off to college, we had a huge growth in the Black community of Milwaukee during World War II. The factories here needed workers, brought them up from the South, part of the later Great Migration. And you can drive around the inner city to this day and say, oh, those look like nice, solid German homes, and not see, and I imagine it's true in some student housing in Madison too, not see what it's like inside, the neglect by absentee landlords, not understand that the garbage isn't getting picked up every week, those kinds of things. I look at photos from that time, and some of the streets weren't even paved.
They were dirt. Remote.
Yeah, streets. But she had not seen what life was like for these new. A marvelous columnist, now retired from our local paper here in Milwaukee, Jean Kane, wrote about Vel, that she was raised more than a century ago in this city as part of the Black elite, the successful middle class. Her father ran an auto repair shop early in the 20th century. That was pretty remarkable. And so she had not seen the poverty of the newer migrants to Milwaukee. And that discrimination that she witnessed here in my city also shaped her intent to change things. But she originally ran for school board in 1953 and lost. That, of course, was, we look at Vel and talk about housing, but of course, equal educational opportunities was the main message of the NAACP until its, or through its campaign that resulted in the Brown v. Board of Education ruling in 1954. Then attention turned to housing.
We're talking with UW-Milwaukee Emerita Professor of History, Jen McBride. She stays with us as we explore the legacy of Vel Phillips. You can join in with your reflections, your remembrances at 800-642-1234. What do you think we should remember about Vel Phillips? Does she inspire you? Where do you see her work today? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring Rick into the conversation. Rick is joining us from Park Falls. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Well, let me just begin by saying that originally the Democrat Party was banned from the city of Milwaukee from about 1910 until 1960 due to enormous political corruption. But what happened was that with the New Left movement and that caused those terrible riots at the Chicago Convention in 1968, Abraham Ribicoff was the chairman of the Democrat National Committee in 1968. And since then, the Democrat Party has gone very hard left, you know, including this notion of identity politics. And in general, across the board, this caused changes in the city of Milwaukee that resulted in, I imagine, a couple hundred thousand white people that had really well-paying jobs leaving the city of Milwaukee just because they couldn't stand it anymore. And the main reason for this was the elevation in the crime rate, if you ask any of these people. And this also had a very severe effect on the quality of the Milwaukee public school system, which precipitously declined since about 1960 and has been doing so ever since. In general, this kind of revolutionary approach of the Democrat Party has completely failed to serve the interests of ordinary people in these big urban centers.
Rick, I'm going to pause. Yeah, pause right there on urban centers, because Rick brings up education there. He brings up white flight. Jen McBride, go ahead.
I always laugh when people talk about identity politics as if it's a new thing. If you study the history of our country and our state and locale from the perspective of women and minorities, that's just because the identity before was always white and male. It's not the approach I would take to understanding the changes in the Democratic and Republican parties with the rise of the Dixiecrats, or certainly not. I'm not hearing the picture of my city as I've known it all my life, and I'm living in it. I'm talking to you right now from my city, and certainly we have problems. But I always laugh when I would go upstate. I remember visiting upstate near Parrot Falls, near a campus, and somebody stood up and said, you know, what's wrong with your city, and why don't you, aren't you more inclusive of African Americans? And I said, how many do you have in Wausau? We have seen changes in my city because we are the only minority city in Wisconsin. But many of us embrace the change. I was raised in the suburbs. I was born in the city, but raised in the suburbs, and loved being able to come back, and I'm proud to be in Milwaukee today. And I wish you saw my neighborhood, which is not far from Bell's. It's beautiful.
Yaya emailed to say, as an immigrant from Africa who is looking for a home in Milwaukee suburbs today, she says, I can't thank enough Vel Phillips for making this possible. Thank you. She will be remembered for her leadership toward a more inclusive society. So, Jen, as Vel Phillips gets a seat on the Common Council, what was it like for her to be surrounded by these men on the council? Was her voice heard? Did her fellow aldermen listen to her?
Oh, for my research, I went into, not only interviewed Vel and some others, but went into newspaper coverage at the time. That was my training, being the daughter of two journalists in the city, and remembering that after they worked together in the party, my mother went back into journalism as she had before marriage. She met my dad in the Journal newsroom, but my mother went on then to be a reporter for the Milwaukee Sentinel, especially covering women. So she loved covering Vel. Others did too. And so the newspaper stories tell us when Vel came into office in 1956, of course, as one of the newest people on the Common Council, she sat in the back rows. But you look at this picture of all these older white men, and here's this tiny, and she was tiny, a little woman in the back row. Well, conveniently, though, of course, she was still pregnant. That put her close to the restroom in the back. But when she tried to use it, she came in the next day and found that suddenly there was a men's room sign on it. So here she had to run down the halls and miss votes to find a women's room, till she finally decided to take the sign down and made it a gender-neutral restroom just off the floor of the Common Council. Other issues that came up that made front-page news, we look now and laugh, but the men wouldn't talk to her, and the mayor, Mayor Zeidler, then found out about this, and as our caller noted correctly, yes, the last socialist mayor of my city, but Mayor Zeidler lived in the inner city himself. And so was a very forward-thinking man. And he said, you will speak with her and you will address her. They said, well, we don't know how to address her. She's a woman. She's not an alderman. He actually called the Marvelous Reference Desk of my Milwaukee Public Library and asked them to look up correct forms of address. And they checked with etiquette books and got back to the mayor. And the mayor called people into his office and explained that she was to be addressed as Madam Alderman.
And we're going to just pause right there with that story. UW-Milwaukee Emerita Professor of History Jen McBride is with us as we explore the legacy of Vel Phillips here on the Ideas Network. Civil rights pioneer Vel Phillips helped lead open housing marches in Milwaukee in the 60s. She passed away Tuesday at the age of 94. She was the first woman and first African-American elected to the Milwaukee Common Council, where she kept introducing an open housing ordinance every 90 days for 7 years until it was finally adopted in 1968. Here she is in 67 when the ordinance was defeated 18-1, Phillips casting the only vote in favor of the fair housing bill.
There are no longer excuses for inaction or delay. Those people who come every day to St. Boniface Church, and they come from all over the country, come there with the idea that nobody is free until everybody is free, and we intend to march, all of us, until we get just some of the basic freedoms that are ours.
We're exploring her life this hour, better understanding Vel Phillips, the life, the accomplishments. Jen McBride stays with us. She is Emerita Professor of History at UW-Milwaukee. She edited the anthology Women's Wisconsin, From Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you see Vel Phillips' work leaving a lasting impact? How do you want her civil rights work carried on today in light of Black Lives Matter? Call in. You can email ideas@wpr.org. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, Jen, let's look at that first night of the fair housing marches in Milwaukee. The group of about 200 marchers faced thousands of counter-protesters who shouted racist epithets. They flung bodily fluids, rocks at the marchers. Can you paint a picture of what that was like, and how did Vel Phillips react to that kind of violence that was going on?
I remember it well, because as the marchers would continue for 200 nights through the winter, they came into my suburb of Wauwatosa as well. I also look at the photos now from the time, and when I use some of those photos in my classes at UWM, I blacked out some of the language on the signs because it was so offensive. So here is Vel helping to lead marches, the NAACP Youth Council, which to picture the times. She had been so alone. Father Grappi did not come to St. Boniface Parish, which I also remember well. An aunt of mine taught there in the 1950s, and we'd visit, and the poverty was...
And remind us who Father Grappi is.
Father James Grappi, mm-hmm. a white priest from Bayview, also from the south side of my city, got involved when he came to St. Boniface Parish in the inner city. He became involved with the NAACP, the marvelous organization that has led so many efforts in this country, and created the Youth Council, saw this rising generation that wasn't going to take it anymore, worked with these students, and the Youth Council started the marches with Father Grappi, and they decided in 1966 that they had decided that they would support Vel's Fair Housing Ordinance, which, as you noted, went down to defeat over and over and over, 18-1. And so it came to August of 1967. This was about a month after about a month after the riots of 67 that I remember so well, in that long, hot summer everywhere. They started the marches and were met on the south side as they crossed the viaduct by just disgusting displays of inhumanity. Vel was terrified. She was, again, raised in the elite, in the upper middle class, college educated, that people did not behave this way. She had encountered individualized discrimination, but had not seen mobs such as formed. And as many as 2,000 counter-protesters are the estimates on the south side waiting for the marchers. She and Dale received death threats. He begged her not to march. But she said, I have to do so. Mm. And that they were marching for her proposed ordinance. She would march with them. She described coming home and having to immediately shower and wash her hair because of the excrement and other bodily fluids, as you noted, that were thrown at them. The marches continued, the rallies at the Youth Council Freedom House in the inner city in St. Boniface Parish. And there, of course, we saw the nation realize what segregation and discrimination were like in the North. All the attention had been to the South, where you saw fire hoses and dogs attacking the freedom fighters and the marchers on the Montgomery Bridge. And we in the North said, well, we don't have those problems. We don't bring out dogs and fire hoses. We certainly had problems. And when one night at the Freedom House, Val Phillips and Father James Grappi and almost 150 others were arrested for holding a rally on their own front porch. And the telegrams went out immediately to the leaders of the NAACP nationwide, brought attention to it, and one national broadcaster referred to Milwaukee as the Selma of the North. That's how bad it was here. And this tiny woman, she only topped 100 pounds when she was pregnant. Petite, pretty, soft-spoken when she wasn't speaking with that voice that you heard from the floor of the council. And here she was in the midst of this mob and this vicious violence night after night. Think of the other marchers, the young people especially, who are still with us today as the elders of the community, and how terrifying it must have been for them, and the grit it took to keep marching for 200 nights. They stopped marching in March of 1968. Father Grappi decided to bring a halt and focus on other efforts, like the legislative efforts in the Common Council. We had seen progress. The state had passed a fair housing law that only covered about 30% of the housing, though Vell's ordinance would cover about 90% of the housing in this city. 11 suburbs around Milwaukee had passed fair housing laws. Milwaukee's mayor and his men in the Common Council absolutely refused until April of 1968.
And let's pause right there and bring in Kim in Thiensville with a story. Hi, Kim. Good morning.
Hi. I met Val later in my life, and we were involved with a group called the Milwaukee Ethnic Council. And at that point in life, Val wasn't driving, so people had to drive her to places. So very often when we had meetings, I'd have to go over to her residence over on the east side and then drive her somewhere. And I'll never forget one night we were driving along, and we got to a stop sign, and we were at this street, and she said, "Kim, do you know why this street has one name there and one name there?" And I didn't know. I was relatively new to Milwaukee. She said, "Kim, that part of the street is where the black people lived, and part of the street was where white people lived." And she said it so matter-of-factly, and it's just like her whole life was committed to educating people and getting people to think about things differently. But I think the thing I'll always remember about her was how strong she was, and after all she had been through in her life, she was always so gracious and kind, and just you'd see her and she'd ask how your family was, and she just was an incredible person. I've been honored to know her in my life, and I'm so glad of that. So I just wanted to share that.
Oh, that is a beautiful anecdote, Kim. Thank you for sharing it. Jen McBride, what did you hear there?
That's the Val that I got to know too, even when I was a little girl. And I'd had a childhood illness, polio, so I was very small for my age when I first met Val, but I soon started to grow and soon towered over her. And then years later, getting to see her again, and we met, and she spoke so wonderfully of my mother. She remembered me as a little girl, and I certainly remembered her as this pretty little woman. I remember the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner, annual event of the Democrats, my mother was covering. She took me with her, and we went to the restroom, and there was Belle. We were chatting away, and I just looked at this woman in this ball gown, and we didn't have them yet, but I thought, she looks like a black Barbie. She was just so perfectly turned out, and she was so giggly and funny with me. I can imagine Kim could share more experiences of, yes, how kind she was, but her sense of humor would come out so often, and I think I have to think that's what carried her through. Her essential optimistic view of humanity, that people could be educated and accept change, and her sense of humor to find humor in some of the most awful things she witnessed and lived.
We only have about a minute left of our conversation, and I want to ask you, because Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett tweeted about her saying that though she is no longer with us, we must continue the work she started. Do you see that work continuing of the Vell Phillips that you saw from the 1950s?
Every day. I see my city with a lot of work left to do, and thank heavens we have Tom Barrett to help us with that. But I see my city being so different from what it was. And I saw it at UWM, two remarkable women in the UW, Kate Clarenbeck and others, did a study in 1966 that found that in the entire UW system, there were only 300 African-American students in the entire system, most of them, of course, at my campus in Milwaukee, as we continue today. I see 300 African-American students in one classroom at UW-Milwaukee today. The progress in education, which can only come with progress from housing, the two were so linked. Seeing my daughter grow up in a high school here that was integrated, I did not have that experience. It's a remarkable change. It's a very recent change. We're still wrestling with it, definitely. But we've made progress thanks to people like Vell.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jen McBride is Emerita Professor of History at UW-Milwaukee. She edited the anthology Women's Wisconsin, From Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium, author of On Wisconsin Women Working for Their Rights from Settlement to Suffrage. This remembrance of Vell Phillips was produced by Colleen Leahy, Michelle Johnson, and Cheryl Gasser. And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.